This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 7-Eleven, brought to you by Marvels, a new podcast from Marvel and Stitcher. Learn more at marvelspodcast.com. And Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com, enter promo code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners, just like you. My family pick of the week 711. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
7-Eleven, freedom's waiting for you. Do they still use that slogan? Is that a thing? All right. I like the idea of 7-Elevens, but I don't ever go in them.
I didn't grow up with them. It was always exciting because it was the only place I went to on a road trip. Like if we were somewhere exotic,
right?
In air quotes, they had a 7-Eleven, so it was always exciting. So that's how I feel about them.
That's a very 80s childhood thing. Like, if you grew up in an area that didn't have Pizza Hut, you're like, but it was an AT.
Slurpees. Big gulps.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, we got a third guy here, Ryan Haupt.
It's me. Guess what, you guys? I saw a shark today. Looked it right in the eye, underwater. Lemon shark, Josh.
Okay, so 5-6 feet?
Oh, yeah. It was big.
Nice. Yeah. Which doesn't sound like 5-6 feet in shark terms. Well, that's not so big. In front of you in the water? Jesus.
Real big. Well,
they're pure muscle. They're pure muscle.
It's a kingpin. Yeah.
Were you expecting it? Were you surprised by it? Did you say, why don't you come down here and chum some of this?
Well, I mean, I was scuba diving, so it's not like, you know.
We're in the water.
Yeah. No, I looked it right in the eye. Like, it was under this ledge on the reef, and we spotted it under this little ledge just chilling with a little remora, and I was right up there looking at it.
Connor, did you catch what he did there?
The thing
where he's like, yeah, so I saw a shark. And then, well, I was scuba diving at the time, like an asshole.
You've been very aggressive to be on the email thread leading up to this recording. Now we're Rich, going and you're being aggressive. What did I do to you, Josh? I thought you would want to talk about sharks.
I do want to talk about sharks.
And the whites of their eyes.
To be fair, you tried to add a book 10 minutes before we did the show, and I had just put the script away. And you don't do that.
Well, I hadn't finished reading, and it's fine. Because
you were off adventuring, Dr. Doolittle.
True. Okay, so guess what? We're doing a show. We aren't quite done with the year, so we're almost done. And then we can do this nonsense when we're off the air. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, called it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, the other books of the week if we have to, the patron pick, some listener mail if we have time. Although we're already long, so there's a good chance that won't happen. It'll be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be spoilers. Exercise some caution. This week, in the midst of the Thanksgiving holiday, Josh threw a curveball at the audience for his pick of the week.
So the good thing about the time is I don't think this is all going to take very long at all. I had to think about this. You know, Books of Magic number 14 was my pick of the week. When I made the decision, I said, I'm good with this. After the pick that I had a little while ago, I'll say two weeks ago.
This is your third Vertigo. Magic. You had the Hellblazer one, then you had the doll.
Vertigo's on a roll. I mean, by the way, like, you look how many Vertigo books are out this week. I'm like, you rebranded Vertigo. You got rid of all of the books. You got rid of Vertigo. Then you brought all the books back.
It Black Label is basically Vertigo now.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So, on the heels of that other John Constantine book that was the pick previously. Mm-hmm. In which Tim Hunter is sort of the villain of the future that John Constantine is in. This, I was surprised. I've been reading Books of Magic this whole way through, this 14 issues, because I don't really know Tim Hunter. It was the one part of Vertigo that I hadn't read. And so I thought this was a good place. And Tom Fowler's doing layouts on it. It's been pretty good. It's been very British. It's been very sort of Vertigo-y, you know, like, but sort of new, but I know that it already existed, so it'll hold up to a certain extent. And in this issue, that John comes to meet this Tim, and John, you know, like, so, and you've basically got John, who is sort of like, he's a kid. There's nothing, he's not that thing yet, but it's like Hitler in the basket kind of thing. Like, should I kill him or not? And then, you know, Tim is sort of on his side thinking the same thing, and they're both kind of smug. and they're kind of interesting. And basically, the middle section of this book has two sequences that are happening concurrently, and it's one from John's point of view and the other one's from Tim's point of view, and every page is half and half. And they're even like laid out differently as they go through this, and there's two plots that happen. There's Tim who has to do this thing, and then on the other side, John has sort of made a deal with these cannibal demons, you know, and they're going to kill Tim while he's working on this magic problem that he's supposed to, this test he's supposed to pass. And I really like the structure of it and how you have two characters who are both supposed to be heroes, but are also sort of not. They're both anti-heroes, and they're against each other, but you don't really want them to be against each other, and there's a lot of tension there. And, you know, because I think one of the things that I like about Tim Hunter is that you're in Constantine's world, which I know very well, and it's just coming at it from a slightly different angle, and he's a kid, but he's got other stuff going on than John does, and John's stuff is very, very specific. But it did have all of that, you know, you can't trust anybody. You can't trust that the right thing to do isn't the right thing to do. That's actually the sort of theme of this whole thing, is that in order to get one of the books of magic, it's this blank book that John says, I've got for Tim. And so that gets Tim to go to where he is. And he's supposed to take a test. He opens up the book and is then sort of zapped into this world where there is this thing that is not a demon. When heaven and hell split, some of the demons decided to remain neutral. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those guys.
Jeez, Switzerland.
But after it was all over, God was not into their neutrality at all, so he punished them. And so they look all beat up and shit. But it turns out that these guys are the best non-judgmental arbiters of anything, of any games or contests in the world, because they really have no position on anything. And so Tim has to do this simple test. And if he doesn't pass it, he dies. And if he does, he wins the book or whatever. And it's two pictures, like, which one should you do? And one of them is like, stab the little girl. And the other one, save the little girl. And he goes, oh, this is really easy. And then he gets to a point where both choices are he has to kill somebody. Hmm. And he's like, this isn't fair. And the guy's like, you got to choose. You agree to do the game. And there's some trickery. There's stuff that happens. And in the end, John's like, that was kind of cool. You did a good job. But also, John tries to kill Tim in the middle of this.
So I read that Hellblazer pick you had, and we're going to talk about the other Hellblazer book in a second. So is this all the same world? Are these shared universe books?
I guess, yeah. This is our world. This is that John, too. And he's definitely from an alternate future. And he's been gone for a while in this world.
And in that book, Tim Hunter was a bad guy. So is this this is the younger version of that character who will come to be?
I don't think we know that.
And we don't know why Tim Hunter was a bad guy yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
But I get the sense that that was like a different, like an Earth 2, Earth 1 kind of thing.
It's very confusing.
Or maybe not. I don't know.
Does this say on the Sandman universe on top?
On
the cover?
Let's look. I think so, though. It's definitely got that same trade dress.
That's what Hellblazer says.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's the same John. It's the same John. Yeah, Sandman universe. So, yeah, it's all shared universe. You know, like Vertigo. So, and also like the two different styles, you know, the John bit versus the Tim bit, they're finished differently. Like the inking is different on each, and the coloring is different. You know, John looks a little more sinister from Tim's point of view, and you know, it was really nice. It was a cool structure. Simon Spurrier co-wrote this one. I don't know if that means that he's coming over it, but he's the one who's writing Hellblazer now.
Yeah.
Along with Cat Howard, who normally writes this book. And so it rang true also. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes a character will come back and then somebody else will do them and they just get it completely wrong. Like Bendis has got an 80% success rate and those other 20% just like, what the hell is he doing? So, and it'll be concurrent with something else, you know, that character is appearing correctly.
So this Hellblazer, is it the current buzzed haircut Hellblazer or the older Hellblazer with the flat cap?
It's the buzzed haircut one, but I want to say the old one made an appearance like in the background at the end of this one, although that might have been in Hellblazer. That was in Hellblazer. Yeah, it's not in this. No, it's the John, the younger John who got transported back to our world.
Ryan, I find it interesting that Josh always says he hates horror books. However, he picks Books of Magic, Basket Full of Heads, and the Constantine Hellblazer Prelude special as his last three picks of the week.
I didn't pick
that. Yeah, I
picked the Dollhouse.
There's also a myth that he hated fun for a while.
Damn.
So the Dollhouse just, murders, whatever that was.
Yeah, just the Dollhouse family.
Sure.
Listen, I contain multitudes. What do you want? You want me to say I'm this way and then stick to that forever?
Yes.
That's so boring.
Did you read this, Ryan?
I did not read Books of Magic. No, I read.
So I think if you had like Vegas odds, like mm-hmm. on what the pick would have been, I think the heavy money would have been on John Constantine, Hellblazer number one, Simon Spurrier, Aaron Campbell, yeah. Jared Belair.
I thought about it, but in terms of, it's the same character, and it's written by, you know, Simon Spurrier co-wrote this one too. So in terms of that, like from a structural craft standpoint, I was just more impressed by this issue, although I really did like this Hellblazer number one. And you read it, so what did you think?
I did. I decided, you know what? I'm gonna jump on. I've read enough Hellblazer, and you're excited about all the Vertigo books coming out right now, so I figure
it's a number Vertigo's one. Vertigo's in great shape.
It's a number one issue, and you know, we don't like to encourage this kind of behavior, but I figured it was a number one issue, so I'll jump on. I really liked it. I really liked the Aaron Campbell art, which was really unusual, at least for the kind of books you normally read. And I love the texture of John's face. It was almost like sandpaper.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was very Hellblazer. Like, yeah, this, yeah. This book was indistinguishable from a 1 through 300, you know, Vertigo Hellblazer issue.
And you were talking before when you picked that other issue, which I wish I could remember the title so I could stop saying the other issue, but how Simon Spurrier, who may not be your favorite writer, at least being British, lends authenticity to the dialogue. And
oh,
I mean, this is very, very specific British dialogue here.
No American could write this.
No, not this authentic.
The criminal guys, yeah. You know, the whatever his name is, all that was the Reboys, that dialogue. No American can do that.
Nope.
It's just. I can barely read it, and I'm pretty good.
Yeah, there was a couple of times I was like, I have no idea what they're saying.
Yeah.
But we've also spent enough time in London and in England around British people. I mean, it felt fun to read, and it felt very sort of very different from the normal comic.
Yeah, and that is a big part of it. It's just that slightly left of what I'm used to, but I can still understand it. I mean, it's almost like, you know, a lot of the British TV and comics to me are, you know, they're just like, oh, we're getting transmission from another world. I can understand it, but it's different enough, which makes it interesting.
Which is why I love Canadian television, because it's like this weird hybrid between America and England, and it's very strange. I assume this bouncer, Nat, will show up again and be either his new Chaz or not, but she was a great character.
She was. She was really good. And right away, like, I'm not going to sleep with you, you know, and just she's capable. She's, you know, and she calls him. She's like, no, you're going to gather me around you and screw me over. And that does happen. That's true.
So Constantine gets thrown out of a bar for making a I thought it was a funny joke.
It wasn't bad, but it's a royalist bar.
And he gets thrown out by this bouncer who then proceeds to totally psychologically break him down while they share a cigarette. And then he gets kidnapped by the street gang because they need a magician to clear out the park that they used to sell drugs. I mean, this was a weird week of comics, and I don't know what I would have done if it was Pick the Week, but I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, I did too. It was just classic. The bit where the guy comes out after him and he's Constantine, you shit. Like 15 years ago, he failed to remove a curse on him, and he shows his head and he's all scarred up, and he's like, you look like a manky bullock. It is. It's straight up. That's Ennis. That was an Ennis moment. Yeah. And sort of the art was very, it was like Tim Bradstreet, who used to do all the covers.
Yeah.
It
was a lot Tim Bradstreet.
Yeah. You know, and there's a lot of politics in here in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. There's social politics. There's economic politics. There's obviously class is always going to be a factor when you're talking about, you know, British society. Yeah. And then there is that little bit where you've got that other John Constantine who is Constantine from our world, apparently. Like somebody had mentioned to me.
What do you mean, our world?
The original, whatever the original Vertigo.
So the original so from issue 1 through 300. That's this one.
Yes, yeah, somebody wrote it.
Wasn't he at the end of that issue, like an old man in a flat cap?
Yeah. Somebody reminded me of that, and he's at the end of 300. I'd forgotten that, but that's apparently that guy. So who knows? It's a little multiversal.
Ryan, are you a Hellblazer guy?
Off and on. I've read some of the classic stuff from the early run, but haven't really kept up with it. And then when they started folding him into the DC universe, I think that, ironically, lost a lot of the magic.
Yes. Ooh. No, it no, totally. That just did not work. And this is, they're doing it. What I mean, what's curious to me about this and books and all that stuff, like, why do you think you can sell it now? That's what I don't understand.
I don't know that anyone can answer that question in comics about anything.
That's a good point.
I think it's all just flailing blindly.
Well, I generally don't understand is that they killed what they had that was really good.
Yeah.
And they tried to redo it. And then, I mean, I just said that they killed that. They killed Vertigo altogether. And now they're doing exactly what Vertigo used to be. And I mean, exactly.
It is weird. I mean, it is kind of crazy that you had like three Black Label books this week that could have that would have been Vertigo books. And it's just very bizarre.
It's very strange.
Someone has a grudge.
And I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. It's great. I get to read this kind of stuff again, and I'm not going to be like, well, it's not 301. I don't give a shit. It's good to have something I like to read again, and just a little of this, monthly is all I need. And I'm happy.
You don't want it every 2 weeks? Because they want you to have it every 2 weeks.
No, I don't. I don't want anything every 2 weeks.
So I have a sneaking suspicion, Josh, that we're going to have to put you up against the wall.
Why is that?
Because in the old days, you said anyone who stopped reading Lazarus was going to go up against the wall.
Right.
In your new regime.
Yeah, that's true. I did say that.
Now that we're on Lazarus Risen, which is the new quarterly format for Lazarus, which is like three times the normal length, you have been lukewarm on it. And I just suspect that eventually you're going to end up against the wall like many leaders do.
I mean, if I have to put myself up against the wall, so be it. We talked about this before. I really enjoyed this, I'm making air quotes, issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a passive enjoyment, I suppose. Like, I was doing the script and I was like, I don't really know what to say about it. It's a lot there, and it's so far between I'm failing to make the sort of connections that I was making before. So instead of thinking too hard about it, I'm just reading the story. And if I don't get something, oh well, maybe it'll come around.
Ryan, are you still reading this?
I must admit, the new format has thrown me, and I haven't been keeping
I mean, honestly, I'm thinking of revoking the policy because I think that the new formatting has made it challenging for people.
It's like by rebranding the book and by changing the format, it's no longer the old book, so therefore you no longer go against the wall.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's
a loophole.
It's, it's an $8 book every however many months,
But what, did you enjoy this?
I did. I feel like I would want it more regularly and slowly, but I really like, but I'm just forgetting because there was so much. I really like the development of Forever in this.
Mm-hmm.
I was halfway through and I go, oh, she got like her mind, she got control of her mind at some point, I think.
Yeah, she was sort of her sister sort of helped her wean her off the drugs and.
Yeah. And so she's trying. So I like that you're seeing her really mature and come into her own in a way that she wasn't allowed to before. But I couldn't remember if the sister who's now the head of the family is good or bad. Like I couldn't.
Well, she's the one that helped her get her off the drugs.
Right. That's what I figured. But like I'm saying, I just couldn't place all that because it's been, probably more than a year since that happened.
Right.
So and if this was the only book I was reading and it came, it'd be fine. But I'm reading a lot of books. But I like how handily she dealt with the threat in this. The big scary Russian guy with the crotch of skulls who can't be stopped. And the conversation with the Russian family head.
Mm-hmm.
It was all really well done. It was sort of classic Rucka. It was great. I thought.
I feel like they've been fighting this Russian dude for like 3 years, but that could be because of the way the schedule is now. But
it's only been an issue and a half.
So. My favorite part was actually the cliffhanger where she shows up to talk to the new Forever, her next version.
I did too. Yeah, no, there were a lot of great things in this issue, but I've literally forgotten them since I read them until you brought them up.
I liked it, but like you said, it's tough to get into it. It's because it's not quite a trade. It's not.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I don't think this format's the way to go.
And I don't know how else to keep it alive.
I don't think they can do it. I think that's the problem. I think this either needs to come out.
Could you just do one big graphic novel to wrap it up and then wipe your hands and walk away?
I mean, I'll take it. You know what I mean? I'm not like kill it, but I think that his eyes are bigger than his stomach.
But also, what do you wrap up? because it's not...
Not even close.
The story is too sprawling.
Yeah.
I don't know what the end game of the story is. It's not like there's a villain to defeat. It's just the world. And so if Carlyle wins, like, takes all the other families out, that's not really the story.
And he went through such... You know, Rucka went through such pains to create this rich and full gigantic world. And as such, I still feel like we've only scratched the surface of it because that's what he kept telling us. Mm-hmm. And now it's so big. If you're going to work with this one guy who is amazing, you're never going to get to any of it. It'd be like if, you know, it'd be like if an Astro City came out every, you know, well, for a while, this is what it was. It was like once every couple of years,
right?
You know, but when
Astro City was usually a one and done, or at least a much shorter, less sprawling story. It was just a glimpse into the world. Whereas this is like, you know, this is the plotting of a intricate novel, and it's really hard to follow.
It's not even one novel. It's like a plotting of an intricate three or four novels.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, I just mean Astro City, and that, like, the way that Busick set it up, it was full of promise and tributaries and things like that. And in that last bit, where he really did do a monthly book for a while, and he got to explore all the different bits of it, and that was by using, you know, A, he had somebody paying for it, and B, he had, you know, different artists coming in, and it stayed on schedule. You know, over the 3 years, 36 issues, you really got to do something up. But this 65 pages every two or three times a year, it's going to be like reading one chapter of a book a year, and it's hard.
That's a huge hard thing because
it feels like reading, you know, Love and or War and Peace, you know, a little bit at a time twice a year.
It's too sprawling to do it this infrequent. That's the real challenge. It was fine as you said, it was fine as a quasi monthly book, but now it's just like, what just happened, and not enough has happened now to keep me, you know, to keep us all very interested for the next one. I want to keep reading it, but it's tough.
I mean, I'm glad that, you know, I feel like you're in the same spot. Like,
I love this book. It was one of our favorite books when it was coming out regularly, but it's tough.
I understand practically why this is the format, and I don't want them to kill Michael Lark, but I don't think this works.
Against the wall, Lark.
No! That is not what I said.
I was watching the SNL Thanksgiving special, and they had a Ladies' Man skit, and it made me think of Michael Lark.
Yeah, what's that here on this wall? Hold on, let me get my inkbrush.
I also was thinking of Michael Lark, but because I've been rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine with Julie, and he's in, he's a cannibal.
That's an old joke for old school listeners.
Oh no, I remember. Yep.
Action
it's
Comics.
It's not as old as Rich People.
1017, art by John Romita Jr., words by Bendis, inks by Jansen. Josh, do you want to let out your patented "I hate crossovers" scream?
This sort of the cover made me more mad than anything, and I said this to you guys last week, I think off air, but like Action Comics is not on here. It is in little tiny letters up in the front. So I'm like, oh, this is some Lex Luthor special. Yeah. I don't need to read it. And then I'm like, oh, no, it is Action Comics. And then I wonder, well, is it really going to be Action Comics, or is it going to be some stupid thing that isn't Action Comics that you called Action Comics because of this thing? And it pisses me off. However, I really enjoyed reading it.
I mean, this is kind of he did as good a job hybridizing.
Yes,
and I say this as someone who's not following the main plot of Year of the Villain. I don't really know what it is. I don't know what's going on with Lex, but
it's dumb.
Is it?
Yeah, it's dumb.
Well,
what he did was he basically shunted the Year of the Villain stuff into the wraparound story, and then went back to what he was doing, which is.
Do you guys actually think that a group of gorillas could put the beat down on Superman if they caught him unawares?
No.
Okay.
Unless
the gorillas are real strong.
Unless they're using magic.
No, the gorilla city is all about science.
I know.
Then no.
Okay. All right. So they just caught him off guard.
However, I did enjoy the return to Gorilla City and the kind of goofy gorillas from Batman Universe. And I thought the Clark stuff at the planet was terrific.
Yes.
Yep. The return of the sexy redheaded firefighter who we forgot about, who disappeared like a year ago. And then the Clark Lois scene was great. We all know where he's building with the Superman story. and we talked about this last time, I just don't understand. It's not being earned, and all this does is this kind of story is reinforce how great it is for Clark Kent to exist.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, and there was that bit in the Tom King one,
Up in the Sky.
Up in the Sky. You know, where he's talking about his writing and how it's like, you know, the prose is like how his father would do it, you know, like reminded of him. You're right. And that doesn't work if everyone knows that Clark Kent is Superman, because then your byline is by Superman and it's stupid.
Yeah.
And so as far as like showing another side of this guy, having it be a thing that nobody knows about, mm-hmm. makes it more interesting. That contrast is the thing that he takes pride in.
I love that Perry and Jimmy know Clark well enough that when he comes in with that look, they're like, just get out of his way. Let him get to the mm-hmm. keyboard.
I like that bit a lot.
This is so great. And that page is my favorite page. His Perry is wonderful. And you can go right to HR and put that on my tab. that was my favorite line of the whole week.
I liked the way that I don't want to say that Romita's slipping, but some of it's a lot looser than I'm used to, which I don't necessarily mind, but I just noticed it was different. There's that bit where he's actually the first page of that conversation where you're way out and then you push in and you're just in the newsroom floor. And then you've got Perry leaning on the wall, his glasses up on his forehead. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful bit of composition there. And I just, that whole conversation where they're talking about Leviathan, and I was like, wait, this lady was involved with Leviathan in some way, but I don't quite remember. There's just a lot of stuff going on.
She's the Invisible Mafia.
That's right. Okay,
one. She runs the Invisible Mafia. She runs the Red Mist. The whole club that blew up was her club.
Yeah, I knew that part.
Yeah.
I just knew it was from the beginning of Leviathan, and I forgot how that went. But then the sort of the drama of the giant fireball that goes by, that was really, I was like, that's very Superman-y. That's cool.
If they're trying to make a case for to not having Clark Kent, they're doing a very poor job because this is how great Clark Kent is as a character, separate from Superman.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to assume this is all a feint.
I don't know.
Whatever.
And I also trust in Bendis.
It's true.
It's all an interesting story. I just don't, you know, all I can go on is all of the bad institutional decisions DC's been making.
I don't think Bendis is going to be subject to those, but I don't know.
They all are.
Yeah. I mean, look what they did to Geoff Johns.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. Invisible Woman 5, the final issue of this miniseries. Mark Waid, Mattia, it's Italian.
Dear Louise.
What did you think of the final issue? Did you read this, Ryan? Have you read this miniseries?
I caught up on it for recording this week.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
I read the first issue, and then I caught up on the rest just now. And not bad. A pleasant surprise.
Yeah, it's kind of a palate cleanser in a way. Like, it's, you know, it's Marvel. She's recognizable, but it's a different thing. And she's off doing here, and it's a different Mark Waid.
Her and her black eyebrows.
And I believe this artist, Mattia, did the recent Jessica Jones series that I liked. So I was almost reading this for the art as well, because I like the art quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. There's that whole thing, and I know Mark Waid is where I originally heard this, where like Sue is the most powerful member of the Fantastic Four, because the force fields, you could do so much with that. Mm-hmm. But because the power has such an obvious defensive capability, like it's and Johnny with fire doesn't, like their dynamic as part of a team of four, she does tend to get put in the support role mm-hmm. more so than some of the other characters. And
plus sexism.
Well, but also, she's the only natural defender. So like if you needed to save a bunch of people from falling debris, it's not like you're going to have, you know, the human.
Could have the stretchy guy catch them. But it was cool to see her use her powers in a bunch of different ways, not just in this final issue, but throughout the course of the series. There, you know, Mark Waid is constantly finding new or interesting or just different things for her to do with her powers that she has to do because she's on her own. And that was cool.
Which is very classic comic booky. Like, that's where you're like, you see his Silver Age coming through, which I really appreciate now. I think if I had any complaints about this whole thing, and I don't have a lot. I really did enjoy it, and it was sort of from out of nowhere, and it wasn't like anything else, and it was a different Sue Storm story. I think the utter 180 that the bad guy took
was a little mustache twirly at the end.
Yeah, he got way too arch. There was no doubt about it. So before, he was the greatest guy, and then all of a sudden we come back later and he's the worst guy. And I felt that
he was like the greatest guy and they were a little flirty, and yeah, like she was actually, you could tell, maybe a little jealous about like him potentially having a secret wife, and like it was they had a cool dynamic that, you know, Sue has always had interesting relationships with other hot men who aren't named Reed. But it was unique up until he just, like you said, became a complete villain. And that it was a little weird.
Yeah. I didn't like that part.
Two things of note. One, when you have to find something in a plane and you turn it invisible, I think it'd be really hard to find anything because now you can't see where you're looking. I mean, obviously, she makes the compartments with the luggage visible, but like you can't see to open the, like you can't see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I feel like a bunch of people get really freaked out about being in an invisible plane all of a sudden.
There'd be a shitload of vomiting, like when you walk out on one of those sky bridges.
It's a lot of internal problems with that.
What I thought was funny is that she turned everything invisible, but you still couldn't see the thing.
Right, that's what I mean.
You can turn everything invisible, but we still have to look in the bags?
Right.
Make the bags invisible.
Her walking away at the end and turning invisible as she walked away was fucking badass.
Yeah,
true.
That's a cool moment for Sue as spy. Like, that's a great metaphor. It's a great visual image. You know, that was really cool. I thought this was really fun. I'm glad I took a flyer on it.
This is a good Maria Hill.
Yeah.
And it's also like the thing where there's no shield now. I'm like, all right, enough.
Yeah.
Let's forget about the Hydra thing. Let's get shield back. And while we're at it, let's talk about Nick Fury. No, we don't have time for that.
No, we can't. I mean, there's too much.
It was a fun mini. Like, it really was, you know, it was a great little mini that I'm glad I grabbed.
She changed her hair color. That was cool.
Yeah.
And her skin tone in a previous issue, not this issue, but I loved that. That was so fun.
Let's take a quick break here and talk about a podcast that we're really excited about. It's called Marvels. It's based on a graphic novel by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross, one of our favorite books of all time. It's an incredible window in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I listened to the original one they did with Wolverine set up in Alaska, and the sound design is really top-notch. The voice acting is all really solid. The story itself was really good, and I watched the preview for this upcoming one. So you guys are a little older to me. I don't understand. Was there like some sort of knob turning? What was happening with the sound effect there? I didn't quite get that.
It was a TV switcher like they used in Star Wars.
I just hit the podcast I want to listen to and it plays. There's some sort of weird radio effect happening. It was really cool sounding though.
It's
but the thing
a dial, and that's how you find signals.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought I just typed in the website I wanted to go to.
No.
But the thing about it that was really cool that I'd never experienced before was Galactus is always seen as this big bombastic world-ending threat, and the way that they put it together for this preview, it made Galactus creepy, and I've never had that sensation around Galactus before.
But always remember in your mind's eye, he has shorts on.
And a giant G belt.
Yep.
Where did he get that belt?
Galactus, where?
He's got one customer, and it's a hard year.
Galactus Weldon.
So... We talked about it last time. Really great production values, really good acting, Method Man playing Ben Urich. It's all there. And what is the show? Well, it takes place in a backdrop of the Fantastic Four showdown with Galactus, but it follows a photographer, a student, and a journalist on their mission to investigate a sprawling, superpowered conspiracy theory. The show gets into a level of depth and detail in Marvel that you won't find anywhere else. And if you decide to give it a try, give it a listen, the only way to do that is by going to StitcherPremium.com, signing up with promo code FAN. That'll get you a free month trial of Stitcher Premium, and if you get that, you'll be able to listen to Marvels right now. So that's StitcherPremium.com, promo code FAN, F-A-N.
And it's cool. Like, it really, like, as a thing, I'm a person who would be like, oh, you don't want to do that. And then as soon as I started listening, I was like, oh, actually, this really works. And you know me. I'm a cynical person. I don't like new things.
You're an audiobook guy.
Yeah.
Like, if you're on a road trip, you know, that'd be a fun thing. Like, listen to Marvels on the road. That'd be a great time.
As long as the performances and the production are good, then there's a whole level of things that you don't have to worry about them screwing up and taking you out of it.
Right.
You know, you don't like maybe the Galactus in this story is a cloud, but you wouldn't know it because you can't see it. So you can just picture whatever it is you think looks cool. But really, there's something so intimate about the audio format that you're listening to this. So you know that. But I think a lot of people don't think to apply it to other things. And it can work really well. you know, and you get sucked into it and you get, you know, in just that right way. And it is, it's pretty magical. So I really love it as a format, as a medium.
There you go. StitcherPremium.com, promo code FAN. Check out Marvels. Did you guys have to go back and skim through the old issues of Batman Creature of the Night for number 4, the final issue?
Probably should have.
Did not do that.
That's what I did, because it had been 2 years since the first issue came out, and over a year
I'm just glad John Paul Leon's okay.
Yeah, so John Paul Leon got really sick. Was it cancer?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
So that was why the issue came out. So I don't begrudge them. I'm not upset about the delay. It just made getting into the story difficult.
It just, I mean, once I don't tend to ever do that just because I'm always under the gun to sort of finish stuff. It took me a little while once I got into it, remember where I was and get my bearings. And then once I did, it sort of clicked and I was like, okay, I get this. Like he went overboard and like it was kind of weird. And then they mentioned it was his twin. And I was like, oh, I didn't love that half of the story as much. Mm-hmm. And, at the end of the day, I don't know that I loved the ending so much.
Yeah.
Like, it was good. It was interesting. It was beautiful to look at. It was thoughtful. You know, I don't know that I got a ton out of it or I really enjoyed the ending. I don't think it was a misstep so much as just, you know, it's fine.
I think I feel that way about the whole series.
Yeah.
I loved Superman Secret Identity. This is the companion piece to that. At the end of this issue, he puts the pitch in, the original pitch that he wrote right after. So it took 15 years to get this book made.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it worked all that well.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of it was Superman in the real world, like a real Superman in the real world, and this is supposed to be sort of that for Batman.
I mean, it seems like the Batman thing is real, but he's also dealing with some sort of dissociative.
That's a good point.
Disorder.
And I think that was something about the ending that were like, for the first part, everyone was like, oh my God, it is real. And then by the end, everyone was acting like it was a hallucination again. And I thought, I pick a lane.
So it's like when he like slashes the guy in the bar fight. Now I'm wondering, you know, and somebody's like, oh my God, did he have knives? Like, well, I don't know. Was he actually holding a knife? And we just saw it as a claw because that was his hallucination. Like I guess the point was probably to be ambiguous, but it was ambiguous in a way.
It.
Yeah. It was ambiguous.
He jumped
in a way
off
where,
the thing.
Yeah. And so, and criminals saw it and yeah.
I couldn't trust what the panel was showing me was representing reality or not in a way that I found a little frustrating.
Yeah, I think ultimately that's how I would describe this as frustrating, because I wanted to like it more than I did, and I didn't like it as much as I'd hoped.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
You made me read Valkyrie,
yeah.
Jane Foster, mm-hmm. and I'm glad you did, and I'm still reading it.
Yeah.
This fourth issue, this had a shot at pick of the week.
Fifth,
whatever. There's a lot of fours and five this week, yeah. So I get them mixed up. This was almost a pick of the week.
It was good.
But that was pretty much my review. I really enjoyed it.
Well, it's mostly one long fight scene between her and the Grim Reaper for the most part. There's other things that happen here, but
yeah, but it's one of those good superhero solutions.
Yeah,
you know, look at him as if you're Valkyrie. Oh, takes him down to Valhalla. It was a good solution. You know, it is fun and inventive and sort of unexpected and you know a good resolution. You go, oh, that worked. But yeah, the book's been fun. I think exploring the character this way, you know, especially following her being Thor, has been a good time.
Right. This is a solid superhero book.
Yep. Absolutely.
Anyone else still reading Shazam?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
What? I have one thing that I thought was interesting, but mostly I want to ask, what is going on here? Geoff Johns is supposedly writing this book.
Right.
But it doesn't feel like Geoff Johns. It feels like, if it is him, it feels like someone who's dumbing down the story. And I don't know if that's intentional or not. Like they're trying to specifically do it like a like an all ages book, but it doesn't read like a Geoff Johns comic, and it doesn't read like a DC comic. It reads
that is true.
Like a kid's book almost.
I don't know that it feels all that different than like Justice Society did.
Well, I only recently watched the movie because I had a long flight, mm-hmm. and it's striking me how closely this new series hews to the movie.
Yes.
I guess it's not totally surprising, but yeah, I guess the movie did well enough that this is where the direction they're taking the comics.
No. Don't make those assumptions. Nope. It didn't do that well, and it doesn't matter how well the movie does. This is, they are following all the movies. No matter what happens. Yeah.
Well, I can't figure out what, like, they're doing this weird tease with, like, the return of Captain Marvel, and I don't...
Well, that was what I wanted to talk
about. What are they trying to do?
That was legitimately interesting, where he was in the world that was all for the dead, and he sees a gravestone that says Captain Marvel Sr., and I didn't even... It didn't even register at first. That's how, you know, he's Captain Marvel, so it didn't register, and then the next page, you see the original Marvel family from the original continuity of DC with the original costumes, all as skeletons, and I went, whoa! That's... That seems big. And I went, wait a minute. They're calling him Captain Marvel. I thought they weren't allowed to do that anymore. And then I went back and went back to the grave, and I was like, whoa, so what is... That was really interesting.
Yeah.
They're not coming back. They're all dead. But
I just... I can't figure out, like, is it just a wink and a nod? Or, like, are they trying to reclaim something? I don't know.
I thought the Scott Collins art looked great.
Yeah, it's at times. I thought it looked weird at times.
I really liked Eaglesham on this book.
Yeah, me too. I was kind of bummed, but...
Collins is good Collins, but I think Eaglesham worked for this book, and Scott Collins works less greatly.
There's a thing where when Johns works with Collins that sort of makes me feel a thing. I enjoyed it. I'm not really thinking about it too much or getting into it. It's okay. It does feel like it's missing something, but I literally am just putting that up to... I think you're right. I think he's trying to do an all-ages thing, which... I don't know. It seems like he didn't have to work too hard to do before, but...
Does Billy become less powerful every time he hands out another Shazam...
I don't know.
I don't think so.
...suit? I feel like it...
I think the thing that's the real problem we've talked about before is there's... The foundation here is real creaky. Like, and this is a problem with a lot of DC books, is that without the foundation, with this creaky New 52 continuity, which we're still in, who is Shazam? Who are these characters? Who are these people? Why do they exist?
Because the guy that was the Wizard Shazam is now just the Wizard, and the guy who was Captain Marvel is now Shazam, and they're the Shazam family, but none of them have... And I remember you talking about this on the movie podcast for Shazam, because I listened to it after watching the movie, and it's like, who are these characters? How do you...
How do you call them to dinner? You know, it's just a weird... I've been enjoying this series. This was my least favorite issue, but I did find things interesting about it. But I have been enjoying.
I like that his dad is named CC. That made me laugh.
I was glad to get back into the real world, though.
Yeah, I was too.
Yeah,
I was glad that we were out of the other lands or whatever they are, and then we're back, you know, in the real world with his parents, and his dad showed up, and I was like, okay, that's real drama. That's I can work with that. So that worked for me.
Yep.
I don't know the actual continuity all that well because I don't think I've ever actually read it directly.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know what's what or what's good or bad. I know there's some changes, but that's literally every superhero comic book, so I can't hold it against this one.
We all have stories.
We.
Those are the books we're going to talk about. At the patreon.com/ifanboy, the patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. And on this vote shortened week with the holidays, and we got the post up late because of the travel, and it just was a mess. It's always a mess doing this particular show. But the winner by one vote was Conan 2099, number one, from Jerry Duggan and Tojay Antonio from Marvel Comics. This is part of the 2099 crossover that's currently happening that I am not reading. And this is dealing with Conan the Barbarian. And I was going to say in 2099, but I don't even know if that's accurate.
Yeah, that was confusing.
I don't know what happened in this book.
It was a Conan book.
Was it?
Don't look at the 2099 part.
This was a...
He got cursed by a witch.
Yeah.
He was king for a really long time. He thought of a solution, got out of it. This was 100% a regular Conan story.
That's accurate. However, it. I think... And I'm not
no
even
part
talking,
of it needed to be 2099, though.
But putting that aside,
good.
My biggest problem was a storytelling problem. Was I couldn't tell you the order in which these events occurred and how far we kept jumping in time.
Yes, because there were times where it seemed like it was in the deep past, but he's still wearing his Conan future armor. And then there's times where I thought we were in the future, but everyone's dressed like old-timey peasants.
I think that there were... I think my actual problem in the book was that I think the art from a visual standpoint, design, figure, thought it looked really good. I think there were storytelling problems. I think the artist made a page look good, but I don't think that was very skilled in sort of in the storytelling part. Maybe that had to do with the script or whatever, but I got lost a couple of times, and I think there was some confusing visual stuff, which is what you're sort of alluding to also. There were weird choices, which is, you know, when he goes into the future, it's a storytelling problem. One, the Nova person crashes. Mm-hmm. He picks up his laser sword and swings, and there's a wolf coming after him. I didn't know what the hell was going on there. I went back and forth a couple of times. I don't think that was particularly clearly told. I think him having, you know, going into the future and still basically looking the exact same, mm-hmm. you know.
That was the curse. Like, he didn't, I think.
I don't mean physically. He's wearing the outfit.
Yeah.
If you're talking about, let's say, minimum 700-800 years in the future. Like, he would look more different. I think they could have used more visual signifiers. But then again, it's Conan. Maybe Conan's like, fuck it. Conan wears what he wears. And I can get behind that, too. The thing was, like, Jerry Duggan, he does these little side bits now, and they're fun. He did the Savage Sword of Conan series. The time in that one was all over the place. There were fucking pirates in it. Like, regular, you know, 1700s pirates. But now, it was also the same as Conan Samaria, so I don't know. I just go
now,
with it.
Now, putting that aside, as you said, it was a fun Conan story in which, as Ryan said, Conan is cursed by Morgan Le Fay, when he's in the past, to live forever, live until the sun scorches the earth. So basically until the sun expands and destroys the planets. And also, in the meantime, she's going to live in his head as like a Iago on his shoulder.
That's the real...
That's like one of your guys' powers.
But not fun. This is that. Not
well, sometimes you give up not fun patron powers. I hate the ones where it's just a person's voice in your head when you give out those powers. That would be terrible for me.
So
cluttered in here already.
So here he's bouncing, or I mean, not bouncing around time, but basically, you know, he's in the past, I guess, and then he's in 2099, where he's also the king of Mexico.
The world?
Was that the past? I don't know. And then I was trying to put it all aside. He's got a futuristic. He's got a laser sword. He's got a futuristic throne room. And then he goes
on a robot finger necklace.
He basically dissolves his kingdom and goes on a walkabout, and that's when he runs into the dead Nova, takes the Nova helmet. Him wearing the Nova helmet was kind of funny and cool.
Wasted opportunity.
And then...
Seriously, put a Nova helmet on it. Make that motherfucker Conan Rocket.
Yeah.
That seems like a no-brainer.
And then he has to go. He goes to the Nova Citadel, I guess, is one of the cities. Again, we don't have much information.
He's in LA.
He finds them all dead. Yeah, but like, why is there no? Like, I don't know enough about the world. You know,
it's 2099.
He repairs the helmet, flies the
which doesn't sound nearly as far into the future as it used to.
Right, flies the building away and ends up tricking Morgan Le Fay and getting out of the curse, but then walking through space. I was like, I don't know what happened. By the end of it, I was like, it was fun, but I don't know what happened.
From a plotting standpoint, those things that I paid attention to, I was 100% fine with it. It's a Conan story. It was neither a wonderful or nor a bad Conan story. I'm not entirely sure there are those things. I think there are Conan stories. So take 2099 off of it. Just sort of go with it. If you just go with it, it was fine. If you try to make sense of it, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I'll tell you right now, one star goes for putting a Nova helmet on him and not having him rock it around. One full star deducted.
You're like the Russian judge in ice skating. One full star off of that for that.
I don't understand that reference, but okay.
So what's our ratings then? Ratings on Conan 2099 number 1 out of 5.
I'm giving it 2.75 stars.
And you like it the most.
Well, it would have been 3.75 stars.
Interesting.
One Ryan? Full star.
I think I'm going 2.5.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. That's where I'm at, too.
I probably would have said 3.5, so maybe, I guess it would be 2.5 after that. I think I was trying to be nice, but yeah.
Sticking with any more of these books?
Not if I don't have to.
I'm intrigued by the whole 2099 reboot soft relaunch thing. The only character from that series that I ever cared about was Spider-Man, though, so...
I thought the same thing, because as a kid, when it was coming out, I read Doom, and was Ravage the one that Stan Lee wrote? I think it was.
I wasn't around for this.
Ultimately, I only cared about Spider-Man, so I don't care about this. I don't care about this.
Gil O'Hara.
Yeah. So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you are a patron at any level, all levels, you can vote to add a book to the rundown, as the patrons do, even in the midst of holiday cheer. So thank you for that.
Let's quickly talk about, as quick as we can, we'll talk about Mack Weldon.
I'm so happy that they're on the show. I'll tell you in a minute.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
They're better than whatever it is you're wearing right now. Yeah. They just are. unless you're wearing it, which I am, so I know it's fine. Not fully. I'm not fully ensconced. So there are parts of me that are less comfortable than others is what I'm getting at. It's a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. Those two things really are the crux of what we're getting at here.
Mm-hmm.
A well-designed thing that you're going to use every day, and then the fabric being good. Man, I cannot stress enough how these underwear have not loosened up.
True.
They've held up. They have not gotten pilly. They have not worn through. I wear them, you know, not the same one, but I wear them most days.
Unless it's really cold, then you wear them all at once.
Right. Well, that would be too tight. But the point is, like, they've I can tell you, like, this is over years now. They're holding up. Right away, that makes it worth it. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, simple shopping. The website is not a confusing website. It's easy to use. You find the things you want. Good menus, trees, look at the sizes, look at the colors, choose what you want, go for it. Not a bad experience at all. They will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. I was just talking about the Ace sweatpant with my wife. Like, literally, she goes, oh, you really like those? I go, I know I do. It's wonderful pairs. They're in the hamper right now. I can't wear them. I've got to do laundry just for it. There's a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means that they eliminate odor. Ryan, would you have liked to have some of those in the jungles of Costa Rica?
Yes, I bought a different brand that was supposed to accomplish that, and they wore out.
Yeah, this wouldn't have happened here. Certainly not as quickly. They want you to be comfortable. If you do not like your first pair of underwear, you may keep it, and then they will still refund you. There's no questions asked. Not only do they perform well, it's great, you know, for working out or doing physical stuff. It's great for just sort of everyday life and wearing around.
And we've been talking, I guess, for the whole year about their pants.
Yep.
The Radius pants and the Ace sweatpants, which you just mentioned. And they also have a Sunday lounge pants, which I'm very curious about, although I'd like to wear them other days other than Sunday.
He's lounge pant curious.
I found a new use for the Radius pants.
Go on.
We talked a lot about it. The Radius pant is designed to still be stylish, and you can wear them like for traveling because they're comfortable, and Josh wears the hike a lot. Thanksgiving. It was the perfect Thanksgiving pant.
Oh, really?
I was a little concerned because if you're not gaining 5 pounds over the course of Thanksgiving, you're doing it wrong. And I had jeans on, and I was like, this is not going to work. I'm right on the edge of this.
I also feel like no one ever discusses Thanksgiving dress code.
Oh, well, that was the other thing. I was like, I can wear these pants. They're comfortable. They have a lot of give in the waist. They still look stylish. I threw on a Henley t-shirt over it. It looked fine. I looked like a comfortable, but also,
person.
You know, enough for, you know, not like a schlub at dinner. And they were completely comfortable. I was like, this might be the best thing I've ever done in my life.
I'll tell you something, too. I can't speak to this, but I did have a splash-resistant experience with mine.
There you go.
I dropped some food, and I was like, oh, crap. And then I just, it was gone. Because there's a bit of water resistance built in there.
Yep.
So if you've got gravy spillage, ain't no thing, baby.
So we talked about the underwear a lot, but also the pants been great. So if you want to get 20% off your first order, if you're at all pants curious or underwear curious, go to macweldon.com. That's MacWeldon.com. Enter promo code iFanboy to get 20% off your first order, and thanks for shopping with Mack Weldon. Let's give out the patron powers, patreon.com/ifanboy. If you give it the $5 or higher level, get your own patron power live on the show. Go, Josh.
MCCN, the micro, I don't know. It's just, I don't have the energy left to come up with an acronym for this. But MCCN is a patron, and the power for that person and or entity could be a corporation. That's people, too.
Mm-hmm.
They can tell what menu items you will not like. So if you're at the restaurant and you're like, thinking about having that, you're not going to like that. It's got capers in it.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not listed. You're not going to like it. Or that's, you know, it says it's buttery, but I don't want too much. It's too much butter. You don't want it. You can't tell you're going to like something.
Does it update live?
Oh, yeah.
Like if my mood is different, or maybe the restaurant has recently like changed the way that they prepare a certain thing, are they going to know that in the moment?
At that moment, yes.
Yep.
Okay.
One time I went to a Morton's Steakhouse, and because we could do that on the old business account days, at that other job,
right,
we'd do that
right.
A lot. And it was always like, we didn't do it that often, but when we did, it was like, let's go to Morton's. Awesome. Great lunch. Gonna have a good steak. It was just one day they had crap steaks.
Hmm.
It was like they ran out and went to Albertson's.
Oh, no.
It was the worst. And like MCCN sitting there at the table, he'd be like, I know it doesn't sound right. Order the chicken today.
We got to go fish.
Yeah, it was not. It was. But they'll know. At that moment, that day, that item, don't get that one. You're not going to like that. It's going to be a bad choice.
Well, that's a good power. Ryan, you're up.
I know.
I was like, why did I put Ron?
Oh, man. I'm struggling. I think D's or irons. I think D's or irons can walk on water.
Jesus.
You can turn it on and off. It's
you
not
do this a lot. What's up?
What do
okay.
I do? What do I do?
You gave somebody Aquaman's powers one time. Like,
I was on the water all day today. I got nothing else to think about. I mean,
let me ask you a question. Is there a depth issue?
No.
It's easier in like a shallow puddle, but if it's over like 5 feet,
if it's just on concrete, he can walk on it. No problem.
It's tough when it's tough when it's moving. It's tough when there's like a lot of wave action.
That's the question. Yeah, like what is the are you walking on the surface tension? Does it have traction?
Yeah, he can get traction, but like, you know, if it's as steep as like a steep wave, like if he would have trouble walking up that steepness of a hill, then he's going to have trouble on the water.
And it's moving.
Yeah. The moving doesn't bother him, but
okay, but like ocean swells, I was on the coast yesterday, and there was quite a bit of chop.
It would be tough. He would get tired the same way you would get tired on a hike.
Okay.
So you know.
Further question.
Yeah.
You fall down in the water.
Yeah.
Does the butt stay on top of it, or is that
no.
it?
You're down. He goes in.
Wow. So that's
really,
another thing.
It's hard to climb back out onto the water again. Like once he's under. It's like falling out of a canoe. Like it's pretty tough to climb back out up onto it.
Have you ever been in a ball pit as an adult?
No, I've never been in.
Because
an adult.
The physics change greatly. I have never looked so helpless as trying to climb out of a foam ball pit. There's nothing to grab onto. You can't. Because you're heavy, so you squish all the foam right the fuck down, and you can't get out. It's someone throw me a rope.
I was gonna do a food-based power, but then Josh beat me to it, and I was looking through the spreadsheet, and I know I've been given a hard time on water powers before, but
you know what? No justifying of these powers. The powers are
you gotta own them.
Move along.
Malcolm Eller, if Malcolm has an object in his left hand, he can then duplicate it in his right hand. So
I mean,
if he was holding like a croissant in his left hand, he'd have one also in his right hand.
Question.
Yeah.
Is it a direct clone of the first? So say, for example, you have a dollar bill,
yep.
and then you have the other dollar. Does that dollar bill have the same serial number and therefore is counterfeit?
Excellent question. Answer that question.
Yes, because it's a direct clone.
So he'd want to do more of a bullion thing.
Right, yeah. Or just a gold bar.
But then Josh, if he floods the market, he could destabilize entire world economies. I think he's got to do like a Goldfinger thing and irradiate Fort Knox first.
I mean, but that could be that could be what he's hired out to do.
What if the thing he's touching, speaking of radiation, like what if it's something that is like physically hurting him, like a radioactive element?
Sure, he could duplicate it. I don't know why he would want to.
It's voluntary. Like, it doesn't
like
just
a,
happen.
No.
Like a lit match.
It's voluntary. He makes it happen.
Can he? What if he's holding something in his right hand? Can he delete it from all of existence by uncopying it?
That's a whole other power. That's not
his brother.
that's his brother. Yeah,
Steve Eller. which he doesn't like his power as much.
So Connor, you know I'm obsessed with water. If he's got his hand in a pool, can he duplicate the pool, or does he just duplicate the amount of water that's
the
in
amount
his
of
hand?
Water in his hand?
Okay,
that's in the palm of his hand.
Okay, so machinery.
Sure.
He's got
anything.
He's got an iPhone. He can get a new iPhone.
Yep.
An umbrella,
but it's a clone
deployed.
Of the one he's got. So if there's a problem with the one he's got, the new one has that problem as well.
Right, but he could just switch out the SIM card, and there he's good.
Yeah, it's true.
No, I think I'll go ahead and you clone it the second you get a new iPhone, and then put the new one, put one of them in a drawer, and then you just got to keep. What can you make a clone of a cloned object?
Sure, but then you end up in a multiplicity situation where things get.
Well,
things
you have a problem.
Does the iPhone does it get dumber each generation? I remember multiplicity. How dare you?
It really likes pizza, though. Oh, I love that movie.
I could keep going with these questions for quite some time, but I won't. Instead, we're going to talk about Josh Zoll. And if you happen to be in Josh's immediate, let's say a 10-foot radius, he keeps you hydrated.
Always hydrated.
Yeah, perfectly, naturally, the right level of hydration. No headaches. You can go up to altitude or in deserts.
It's an area of effect power.
This does mean that Deezer Irons can walk on Josh.
No, it's not.
What? No, he does. He's hydrated. He's hydrated enough. It's water. It's water power. That's just...
Wow.
Keep you hydrated, though. I've been trying to drink enough water.
So there's no hangover. There's no hangover with when you go out drinking with Josh, you don't get hungover.
No. Well, you gotta keep close.
If you don't sleep
in the same room as him, you're still gonna wake up dehydrated.
Well, no. If you stay hydrated while you're drinking, you won't get hungover.
Oh, that's the question. All right. So how close does it work?
It's 10 feet.
10 feet. So the so I'm near him, I'm well hydrated, now I've got to pee, but the bathroom is 20 feet away. When I leave the radius of the influence, and I'm maybe not perfectly hydrated anymore, do I still need to pee?
Yes.
Does he remove the hydration, or is it...
No, there's no hydration gets removed, but the topping up effect stops.
Okay.
I see. Okay.
Do we have time for one, or should we not do this next one?
Let's do the email. We've gone long. It's the end of the year. We've gone on a lot of tangents. Let's knock out an email for the people.
Scott says... Scott says... Why is it so many business folks that love comics and want to publish them start yet another comic company rather than partnering with an existing company? And a related follow-up question... How are the smaller publishers staying in business with the market as saturated as it is? From the mouths of babes, Scott.
Well.
Go on.
I mean, why would a business... So let's say you're rich businessman X and you want to make comics. You're not going to go to Marvel. Marvel's not going to do anything with you. They don't care about you.
Right.
Also, you want to be in charge. Because you're a rich businessman X and you clearly have a vision for what you're doing. So that means you're not going to go to another company.
I mean, to me, the answer is it's about IP. They're hoping to create something that catches on and then endlessly creates revenue. And they don't want to do that with anybody else. That's why. And they think they can.
Isn't Valiant getting a movie with Vin Diesel now?
Yeah, they've had movies in development for a while, or at least 10 years. Not 10 years, at least almost 10 years.
Yeah.
It's really about someone thinks they can do something. And they have the means to try. They're not going to just go hand it to another company. They're going to do it themselves.
And also, if somebody has the means to do something, they've looked at a literally 100% failure rate and said, no, me. This time I can do this. It's not 100%. It's 99%, though. It's, you know, and even that, even the successes, you know, even your, you know, Scott Pilgrim's success does not last indefinitely.
Right.
You know, so... And I always wonder about that stuff. Like a company that does a lot of stuff has one pretty big success, and then, you know, 5 years later, are they back to where they were until they find a new thing? It's very...
Well, yeah, I mean, no one knows except for that how their finances work, but that's why you got 10 versions of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah. But it is a weird... To me, it always feels like if you've done your due diligence, it is a weird business to think that it's worth investing in.
You could say that about a lot, the restaurant industry.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, there's romance involved. I think that's a lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, some people are... I mean, Lionforge is a good example because you mentioned Oni Press. They came along, I don't know, 5 years ago?
Something like that.
I didn't give them much chance, but here they are. They purchased Oni Press, and they have... carved out a small niche for what they are focusing on, but I don't know what their finances are like, and I know that the guy in charge is a billionaire, so I don't know how much of it he's paying for out of his pocket versus how much they're existing on their own revenue or not. No one knows but the people who run the company, so it's hard to say how they stay in business because, you know, the market's like, right. Also, yeah. People make money in ways you don't necessarily know. Like,
sure,
Dark Horse makes most of its money on art books or video games, not for the comics they put out on Wednesday. They stay afloat by doing projects for other companies.
I also think the amount of money invested is relative. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're talking about a guy who is a billionaire and he's like, I want to do a comic book company, he doesn't care. Like it's just another. That is how business works. Is, you know, you make an investment, you take a shot on it, that you judge your risk, and it might be that the outlay of cash for supplying a small comic book company for 10 years isn't such a big deal.
Surrounding error.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. Do you know if I'm trying to remember if CrossGen did it like wipe out Elise, or did it not even matter?
I don't remember. No one really knows. But
yeah, it's true.
There's always, I mean, all these companies are staying in business somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know the answer unless you're working.
There's a lot of businesses, not just comics, that are staying in business somehow.
Right. most businesses.
Yeah, this was, well, you're a huge company. You should have money. I was like, no, that's not how companies work.
I mean, you guys might know this more than I would, but how big a difference has digital distribution made in the cost of trying to make comics if you're not worried about having an actual print run?
It doesn't make most of the cost of comics is still the creators.
Yeah.
So it's there no matter what your distribution model is.
Yeah, it's overhead.
That's what people complain about cost of digital comics don't understand is. It's still, you got to pay the people who make the books, and if you want good people on, they're expensive, and no matter how you're distributing them. And then the digital market plateaued at about 10% of the market, and you ended up with a billion digital books in your digital store, and it's even harder to find good stuff when you're, it's all digital didn't really solve a problem.
Yeah, not to mention the massive competition from piracy still, right, which no one talks about anymore, but it's still.
It was going around on Twitter this week. Yeah. Or last week, made the rounds because a creator looked up how much their indie book had been. I can't remember the creator. I'm not trying to protect any names or anything. Looked up how many.
It was McKeever.
Yeah, their digital book had been pirated, and it was a depressingly high number, like high enough that it would be a top tier book if.
Well, sort of people buy the it. Other side of that is just because somebody pirated doesn't mean they read it.
That is true.
So yeah, so that's there's a lot of unknowns in your answer, Scott. But those are some discussion points.
But the main answer to the question is why wouldn't they partner with somebody, and it's ego.
But also, like, Josh walks into Marvel and says, "Hey, I got a lot of money. I want to make comics for you." They're gonna go, "How did you get in here?" They don't care.
Honestly, Connor and I worked for a company and did that. Didn't go well.
Yeah, they don't care. They've got they're fine. They're doing their own thing.
They're good.
Yeah.
They will do like corporate team ups. Sure. So, like, I remember there was a thing with
they get North paid Grumman for that.
Yeah, exactly. But they're like not, there was a thing with like North Grumman having a comic book. Yeah. So
you know, you can go to Marvel, and if you're LeBron James, you can go to Marvel and say, "Hey, I want to make a comic book." They'll do that if LeBron pays them. But they're not going to set up an imprint line because of billionaire X wants to make comics. He's got to do that on his own. They don't give a shit. No. Contact@fanboy.com. That's where you can write in, like Scott.
If you do give a shit, write in.
So real quick, as we reach the end of the year, we've got a couple weeks left for the holidays. If you want to help the show out, there's a couple of places. Patreon.com/iFanboy is the most direct way. As we mentioned before, you get lots of perks, and there's stretch goals and all kinds of fun things happening there. iFanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store if you want to get your grandfather a t-shirt that says G-Dat on it, because he's a G-Dat.
Yep.
You can do that at that store. iFanboy.com/support via PayPal.
If I had a grandfather, I would do that noise to him a lot.
And fanboy.com/Amazon, you can find our books for the Books Below shows and a general link for shopping. And we thank everyone who does all those things to help keep our fanboy going and keep the lights on. And we do appreciate that. Thank you very much. And let's wrap the show up.
Do it. The Books Below, we just released Fantastic Four Behold Galactus, Marvel Select Edition, where Connor and I read three different Fantastic Four / Galactus stories by Stan and Jack and Stan and John and John and himself.
That was super fun.
So fun.
That was a good one.
It was apparent immediately when I started reading how fun it was. And then when you reported back and said the same thing, I was like, I'm right then. It is fun. Go listen to that show. I think that's really, you know, if you haven't read those books, man, we're not at the Daredevil. I think it's as important to read as the Born Again stuff, yeah. but I don't think we were as crazy about it as that, but there was joy. It's been a lot of joy in the Booksplodes lately. That's what I think. Connor, catch us up on the holiday schedule quickly, and then we'll move on out.
Okay, so if you're listening to the show as it comes out and you're a patron, our December patron hangout, our 1 hour of nonsense, is tonight, the usual time. Check patreon.com/fanboy for details. Next week is episode 712. That's our last regular show of the year that comes out on December 8th. That's our last pick of the week show. The week after that will be December 15th, and our all-media spectacular will come out then. And then the following week, either the 21st or the 22nd, somewhere around there, will be our Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker show. And then we're off all shows until January 12th, the return of the Pick of the Week episode 713 will be that day. So that's the holiday schedule. Ryan, tell people about your show.
I do a show called Science Sort Of. We talk about science, not the episode that's about to come out, but the episode after that. I will have my third interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson, having him on the show. Always good to chat about what's going on in his world. You know, I look down at the dirt. I'm a paleontologist. He looks up at the stars. We talk about it.
Well, that's all right. We will not have any scientists on this show other than you. So
I accept.
That's a hard rule in the charter.
I appreciate that.
No scientists.
I want to be your on-call paleontologist. And that applies to all the iFanbase, too. Follow me on Twitter. I will be your on-call paleontologist.
Whoa.
Wait, though. Are you telling me that the Pachycephalosaurus... Yes, I am saying
I'll tell you about Pachycephalosaurus.
I know you will. I know. I hesitate even finishing the word.
You did a fantastic job.
Thank you. I have little boys, so... Lots of books. Head over to ifanboy.com to find all of our podcasts. You know, a lot of people listening just ate a dinosaur this week.
They sure did.
Find out what the pick is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following @ifanboy on Twitter or @ifanboycomics on Instagram, where you will not see it this week. But the best of the weekend panels would be and other stuff that we find that's cool, such as an amazing panel from a Captain America issue where he decided to be a comic book artist.
Yes.
From 3 decades ago. But you can follow us individually on at CLC Kilpatrick and @JFlanagan on Instagram.
And where's Ryan?
Ryan has it on Instagram.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'll cover it myself.
And finally, if you like the show, please leave us a review or a star rating wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts or Apple whatever. Apple shows. I don't know what they are.
Apple World.
Or whatever your aggregator is, if you can leave us a review or rating, that helps people find podcasts. We do appreciate that. Even better than that is to tell your friends about the show if you think they'll like it. We hope you played it during your holiday celebrations in the United States. We hope we accompanied you during your dinner, during your drive. That's all we ask for, really. Help us spread the love, even if your table is full of hate.
Hating dinosaurs. Hate and dinosaurs.
So until next week, our final Pick of the Week show of the year. Ryan, thanks for joining us. We wanted to make sure we had you on before the year was out.
Yeah, it's always fun to do one with both you, Jim Oakes, instead of just one Jim Oak.
Until next week, I'm Connor.
I had a side table of hate. I had a, like...
It the kids table?
Yeah, it was like the card table of hate.
You kept the dinosaur on the main table.
I wonder.